Warning, this podcast has stories of real-life events and true crime that happens every day. These stories may contain adult language and graphic or disturbing details not suitable for everyone. Listener discretion is advised. In our society, most people are content to go through their daily lives safely and peacefully. But our society is not always safe or peaceful. For that reason, some men and women answer a higher calling to defend and protect their fellow man. You probably know someone who is one of these people, or maybe you are one of these people. The ones who see and do the things most people would never want to. These things are sometimes heroic and beautiful, but often they are horrific and terrifying. It's these things they don't share about with other people. It's these things they carry with them, so you don't have to. But when they get together, they talk to each other about them. And they call these stories war stories.
Welcome back to another episode of War Stories. As always, I am your host, Fletch Fletcher, and I'm still a retired cop and the king of useless information, which just keeps getting highlighted more and more every day as I spit out random shit to people who go, how the fuck do you know that? But I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Sohan. What's up?
Still tired, and I'm still your co-host.
Yeah, you are. Yeah. Well, you know, to be fair, of the people we have on the show, you're the only one that will go out and crush crime and suppress evil all night and then come and talk shit and drink booze all day and then find time to nap before he takes care of his baby and his baby mama. So
shit's catching up with me.
You got to do it. Yeah. You got to do what you got to do. Yeah. And I applaud you for that.
Baby mama?
If all the shit coming out of your mouth doesn't completely make sense, we'll forgive you for it.
Just stop me.
And Salty, you hear like a motherfucker. Oh, God.
Oh, God. I'm just looking at this picture and I'm like, oh, shit.
So we had a canine. We had an episode. We had a previous episode. If you've listened to this podcast, we have had a previous episode about dealing with wild animals and dogs. And you had mentioned to us that the worst, I straight up asked you off mic. I said, what's the worst animal? Because you said you've taken 100, over 100 bites.
I don't even know how many bites.
Yeah. Countless bites. And some of those bites went through the sleeve and took flesh. And maybe the people listening to this, if you don't understand something about cops, with the exception of getting shot, pretty much we have to go through everything we would do to a bad guy. So I've been pepper sprayed. I've been tased. I've been hit with a stick. I've taken a bite
sap,
from a dog.
Flashlight.
Yeah. All that stuff. In training, we don't like, okay, go half speed. Yeah, fuck you, half speed. You know, so we don't. It's not that we don't know what we're putting people through when we do this shit. We fucking do. And you were saying you were a canine handler, you've taken countless bites. But some of the dogs, they're dogs. They don't know they're supposed to get the sleeve and not the person.
Oh, they know.
They're smarter than you.
They know. That's the problem. They know.
But then you said some weird ass shit that I had to Google. And again, we've established something, and the reason I always bring it up, I'm the king of useless information. And this motherfucker over here, Salty, said, oh, I was bitten by this. And he said, what was the name?
Bouvier de Flanders.
Bouvier de Flanders. Sounds like a fucking French Simpsons neighbor.
Yeah. And look it up.
But you said it's a cross between like a poodle. It's like a poodle on steroids, you said?
I called it a poodle on steroids.
Poodle on steroids. Yeah. So I looked this fucking thing up, and it looks like a poodle and a shaggy dog had a child and fed it nothing but meth for 2 years.
Yeah. It's a big dog.
It's a big fucking dog. Yeah. And you took a bite from one of these things.
Oh, several.
Several?
Yeah. There was a trainer. Well, there are a couple of agencies that had those dogs.
No shit.
I want to say either Riverside.
San Francisco?
People. No. I don't know if it was San Bernardino or Riverside or somewhere out that way. Mm-hmm. So when we would go to group training, there was always one of them that was there. And then the trainer that was actually training that whole group of dogs had two himself.
A personal dog?
Yeah, his own personal dogs that were fully trained. And like I described it earlier when we were off the air, right. It's like standing still and getting hit by an NFL linebacker.
Damn.
That's the only way I can describe it.
You can look it up. It's a Bouvier de Flanders. Yep. Look it up. And also make sure you look up one where there's a human being in the photo for scale. Because if you just saw it, you'd be like, oh, it's a cute little shit. No.
Anyway, moving on.
So, and we're joined again by Mike and Cartman. What's up, fellas?
Hello.
You guys kissed and made up after our Jerry Springer episode of short stories.
Yeah, we're all right, I think. Or he's biding his time and just waiting for the payback.
Right. Well, okay.
So, I would never do that.
So this is an interesting thing. Is we've gotten feedback, and I posted a meme on our Instagram that went surprisingly skyrocketing in its likes and comments and shit like that compared to some of our other stuff. And it was a black dude with a piece of poster board and a white dude with a piece of poster board. And it was the typical, like, super touchy-feely, protesty, all lives matter, black lives matter, whatever kind of a image of one guy had a sign. The white guy had a sign that said, is my life worth more than his? And it points an arrow at the black guy standing next to him. The black guy's holding up a sign that says, is his life worth more than mine? And it has an arrow pointing to the white guy. And then, of course, somebody had tagged on Gunnery Sergeant Hartman, played by Arlie Ermey in Full Metal Jacket, saying, you are all equally worthless. Facts. And it's funny because it got a lot of responses where people were like, yep, that's exactly it. That's exactly it. And I told people, military police, this stuff like that, racism isn't as big of a problem as in many, many other walks of life, because you're told at the beginning, look, you all fucking suck. You're literally the worst. Okay, when you were in boot camp, did they not tell you you were the most pathetic class to ever come through that boot camp?
Yeah, you're all the worst.
The worst they've ever seen.
They've ever seen,
right? Mm-hmm. Carmen, you were in the Marine Corps. Totally different boot camp. Did they tell you you were the worst class they'd ever seen come through there?
Oh, the worst shit they've ever gotten.
Right. Yeah. Okay. I went to the police academy. Apparently, the instructors of the police academy took their fucking cues from the military, because I was told that of all the police academies that have ever come through there, ours was the worst bunch of losers they'd ever seen. And we must have been pretty bad, because apparently, Salty, when you were in the police academy, you...
Well, number one, all the instructors were Marine Corps.
Right.
That's number one. And number two, we were the worst class on the face of this earth for right. 2 months.
For two
until
months.
The next worst class
sure,
came
until
in.
The next worst. Okay. So when you're broken down like that, you're broken down like that for a reason. And the reason is they rebuild you with an identity. And the identity is not that you're black or that you're white or that you're gay or straight or whatever. It's that you are a cop or a Marine or a soldier or a sailor, right? So that's why we don't look at each other in those terms. And so people have listened to this podcast, and I'm saying this for a reason. People have listened to this. People have come to me and say, man, I love how you guys are just brutal and mean and just honest and just give each other shit. And this, but nobody gets pissed off. Nobody gets butt hurt. Nobody gets upset. And I go, well, that's because we're all, you know, like what you guys just said.
It doesn't
you guys
matter.
Are giving each other Army and Marine shit, calling him a crayon eater. And you know, people in the military call the guys in the Air Force the chair force. But it's like, it's the you can't use that word. Only we can use that word. So okay, quick story. I was sitting at breakfast one morning after a graveyard shift. And I was sitting with two guys from our local sheriff's department who shall remain nameless. And one of the guys was a former Marine who is on the Sheriff's Department SWAT team, and that's a collateral assignment, so his regular assignment is patrol.
A former Marine?
Former Marine.
No.
Oh, here we go.
You not an ex-Marine. He's a former Marine.
He is a Marine.
Okay. No, you can't ever tell them that they're Marines forever.
You think we've gone over this enough.
At one point, he was active in the Marine Corps and was no longer active in the Marine Corps. Does that fucking make you happy?
He's still a Marine.
See, and this is why we can't figure out who gets what area when we need to invade right. some shit.
So the guy who had never served, who was a deputy sheriff, and you'd think, okay, deputy sheriff, give another deputy sheriff shit, and he could about deputy sheriff shit. But I watched one morning where my buddy almost came unglued and leapt across the table and choked the living shit out of his car partner, because his car partner at breakfast looked at him and said, hey, insert name here, what do the Marine Corps and bananas have in common? And he instantly, like, I saw his face, and if I was this car partner, I would have seen the look on his face and gone, Wave off.
Bolton. Abort.
Like, eject. This is, and I'm getting popcorn and I'm just fucking watching because I want to see how this shit works out. And he says, they're both yellow and die in bunches.
Ooh. Oh, fuck no.
Right.
No, you don't rate. Okay. You don't rate that joke.
Now, if Mike had told you that joke, you'd be righteously like angry, but you'd just tell him a army joke in response.
Correct.
So it's that kind of a thing. You guys got to understand this when you listen to this and you hear us give each other shit. We are all in the same club. If you're not in that club, just watch out. Just watch what you say. I mean, you know, there's certain things you don't do, and making fun of, like, if you've never served or you never put on a badge and a gun and a bulletproof vest, don't call a Marine a crayon eater. Is it will not go over well. Yeah. I'm just giving, that's a public service announcement, is basically.
Even if you see him eating crayons.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you don't point it out.
Sometimes you just got to prove a point.
Shit.
Just saying.
So, we are back for another episode of War Stories, and we have some tales to be told. And I my understanding is, Mike, you've got something that you're willing to share. And this isn't, strictly speaking, your typical in-country, out-in-the-field war story, is what you were telling me.
No, no, this has to do with, you know, the stuff that you have to deal with after you get out of the military. And I think, you know, an eventuality for most of us is care at the VA at some point.
And to tag up on what Cartman just said, you're never out.
You're never out. You're right? gonna deal with.
Just you're like, no longer active.
Yeah, you're no longer active. But
you're never out.
Your head will stay in that space for a long time. You know, there's some things that I'll never be able to do the same again, just based on habits and, you know, doing them so often. But those are the things that come with that too. I mean, when I got out of the Army, you think, and I think a lot of people do, that they have this great grandiose plan and everything's gonna go according to it, which military members should know that that's like never the case anyway. You know, stuff never right. works out the way you think it's going to. But I found myself with no purpose in life.
Really?
In the worst way. In the worst way possible. To when you're a medic, and I think maybe being in the medical field too had something big to do with it. But you could maybe it's a complex, but you're a you know, limited resource.
You're a diamond.
You have a purpose, and it's a big thing. It's life and death.
Yeah, you're an absolute necessity to everybody.
To everybody.
Right. Yes. Right. Everyone loves
you. You're the guy. First of all, everybody loves the medic.
Yep. Well, I get out and find myself at, you know, Little Zeke's Bail Bonds doing recovery work after that. And I'm like, this is, you know, don't get me wrong. I had a great time doing it. But I'm like, this is bullshit.
Little Zeke treated me right.
Yeah, he did. But I mean, what's the purpose of what I'm doing? But you know, what do I care if this, you know, idiot doesn't show up to court? He's gonna get picked up on a warrant somewhere else anyway, you know. But it was that, which is not a good mentality to have. And I was in a weird headspace anyway. But
it's a legit, honest mentality.
Yeah, and it started some serious, deep, dark depression where, you know, I dig up other stuff. You know,
how long had you been out?
When it really started to hit me, probably about 2 years.
Okay, so you came home.
Yeah,
you're out. Are you reserve, like going and
inactive?
Doing that, inactive.
So okay, I did my 5 years active duty, and then you have to do your 8 total. So it was inactive, reserve was the other 3.
And then how often do you have to do anything during those 3 years at all?
I think they told me like you have to muster, and I was like, muster these nuts.
I told them I moved every time.
Okay, so you had theoretically mustered, but
yeah,
fuck that.
No, they like called. Well, you got to let us know you're okay. And I'm like, listen, I'm like,
fine.
2 weeks and you're in active reserve. Will you come grab me?
I'm fine.
Yeah, we're good.
Okay, so and when you got out, what I mean? So it's interesting that you bring this up because I just recently had a conversation with a Marine who is 22, and still in, but he has a month left, and he was looking at me to like, hey, I want to get into law enforcement. And I've already applied, and I've already fucked that process up a couple of times by not knowing how the process works and trying to be honest and doing this and that and the other thing.
Ain't no shame in the game. Right, I got DQ'd in psych. You know?
So he was coming to me as like a, you know, hey, I just need to know what I'm doing. I don't understand the difference. Like, I was supposed to do one thing for the last 4 years, and now people are telling me that's the wrong thing. So that was his experience. So I've never experienced that, but I was kind of getting that through him. So you get out. Yeah. And what are you trying to do when you get out?
So my daughter had just been... So that was one of the big reasons that I got out, was I didn't want to have a kid in the military, because you see these military kids, and what they do is travel around, and they can't keep friends for any, you know, amount of time, because they're school to school to school to school.
Yeah, they come up military brats, right?
Yeah, and, yep. And you know, I came up in kind of a tumultuous childhood too, so I don't want that for my daughter, of course. No right. parent does, you know. I want her to have some stability. So I figured, you know, now'd be the time, you know, my contract is up, and, just get out. And yeah, there's days still where I'm like, I don't know if that was the best idea or not, or if I should have gutted it out and stayed in a little longer, you know, doesn't matter at the end of the day.
Right. You skewed the timeline. Yeah, there's no going back.
That's it. So I could waste time thinking about what if, but I just tend not to, cause I don't have the time or patience for that right now. But I did form some pretty, crazy depression from that, to where, you know, you feel completely useless, and you get low enough sometimes that you think about doing some stupid things. We talk about 22 a day, and they give you, you know, certain tools that you need to access if you do feel like you're going to hurt yourself. And I'm not ashamed to admit that, you know, I've been there. Yeah, it's not a good place to be, but you can dig yourself out. And that's kind of what the story is, because I've been doing a pretty decent job of digging myself out of the mess that I've been in. And with those things, understand, it's never you digging you out. It's everybody around you helping you. Like, you know, Zohan was here, you know, and when I needed him. And you, if you don't have a person or, you know, a couple people that are going to back you up when you get out, you're
screwed.
You're up shit creek and you have no paddle. So,
think of those people around you as the paddle.
Yeah.
Because if you don't have them.
I'm learning right now. I'm 30 years old. I'm learning. You cannot do it yourself.
Right.
If you want to be successful or get anywhere, you cannot do it yourself.
Right. And just so the people listening know, when I retired, I'm not 50. I was 35.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it came out of nowhere. And I wasn't expecting it. And it was due to injury.
Yeah.
And I was not happy about it. And it was not the way I want. So I just so you know, I get it. It was not a good place.
I think for men like us and women, you know, women like us, there's a wait, did that come out wrong?
I understood it. You're perfect.
Okay.
Were you looking at Carmen when you said
no.
Forward. And yeah. Women.
Wait, no. There's like 73 different genders now, so you can say whatever you want.
I'm not even. Listen.
That whatever. Collective.
Never mind.
Fucking
I'm not
sigh.
Going there.
Hey, how many uniforms does the military issue? Two styles, men's and women's.
Male and female.
So guess what? There's only two. Fuck you.
That's today.
Strangely how the genome works, too.
Yeah.
I don't really get it. Right. But.
Go ahead.
So men and women in our field, you go from having an honorable purpose, you know, something that's good, protecting those around you and sacrificing and serving those around you. You go from that to fucking picking up bail bonds and weird people running around the city. And it's a fucking, it's a humble check, or I guess, what, ego check?
If you oh, no, it's a gut huge check. Hit to your ego, because in the military, you meant something.
Yeah.
And now
you walk around.
Nobody
knows.
Fuck.
Everybody knows what rank you are. Everybody
right.
knows what unit you're in. Everybody knows what you do.
What you do.
What right. you do. And then you get out and nobody gives a fuck.
Right.
Like, just like overnight. There's no, they ramp you up and get you wound up real good and get you in a, you know, a mentality to go fight a war. There's none of that getting out. They're like, okay, bye.
It's kind of like getting out of prison.
And they give you.
Because in prison,
in many ways,
you got three hots and a cot.
Yep.
And you know what time is lunch and dinner. You know where the rec room's at.
Yeah.
And you know who to go to for cigarettes and who to go to for protection.
Yep.
And then you get out and they go,
figure it out.
You're good. Fine.
Well, my favorite thing is as you're getting ready to get out, they're like, we're going to help you build your resume. You know, you were in charge of this many people and this many $1 million of equipment, and you put it in a resume and you submit a job application. They're like, well, that doesn't do anything for me.
What's warrior leadership course?
Right.
You know what I mean? And I'm like, that's where you learn how to be a non-commissioned officer. What's a non-commissioned officer? Okay, well, we're a leader of, you know, the soldiers. Oh, okay, well, how do you lead? And it's like, what's the fucking point of the certification?
Right, they don't tell you. I mean, they should teach you things like, okay, a sergeant is middle management.
Yeah.
Right? That's what they should teach you.
And I think we eventually learn, you know, how to draw those lines. But
how long did that take?
Fucking still.
And it's all.
I'm still figuring shit out right now.
It's probably still.
And you're beating your head against the wall to do it.
Yeah.
Right? They don't tell you that. You, okay, It's the equivalent of throwing your kid into the pool and saying, swim, fucker.
Yeah. And a lot, you know, a lot of us, we're 18. We haven't experienced any life yet.
Right.
You go from that to the military and then back out into the real world, and you're supposed to function like an adult. And
right. So you're 22 mm-hmm. years old, and you have still never experienced the real world.
Yeah.
You've mm-hmm. experienced what the military calls yeah. the real world.
You've experienced that military version of it. Right. There's nothing wrong with that, but this is things that I wish some, you know what I mean? People could have broken down for me a little better.
Right.
It is what it is. Long story short, they give you a list of numbers to call if you're feeling depressed. So
that's it.
It's like the VA has their crisis line. So,
but there's no like sponsorship, mentorship. Hey, here's your guy who's been out for 10 years. I'm assigning you to him.
I'll get to no, this because this is
all right. Cool. Never mind. Go ahead. No, carry on.
Like a side note. I mean, I don't know how it was when you guys got back. You know how. So, like, when you get back from deployment, they process you back into the States, and that's over like a day or two period where you're going with over paperwork, and they're processing you back into the unit. And one person you see is a psych. And I remember that everyone's got to see the psych. And I remember the psych going, okay, yeah, your unit has severe PTSD. Have a nice day.
I'm sorry, yeah. But yeah, that sounds about right.
Everyone in the unit had was diagnosed right. with severe PTSD. Right. And then enjoy your 2 weeks.
Have a nice day. Bye. Yeah.
Yeah, noted.
See you later.
Don't drink too much.
Yeah. So you all have a debilitating emotional anxiety disorder. So have fun with that.
Oh,
to back Mike up about what he said is, you know, not even knowing what life is, you don't even know what that means.
Right. Because nobody, you've yeah. heard the letters, you've heard P, T, S, and D together, but you don't know what that means.
Well, not only do you not know what that means, but you've now been living a life for the last 13 months that is normal. You're now normal. I mean,
quote unquote. They told you, the Army told you were normal, so you must be normal.
But it's not normal
right.
for everyday civilization.
For society.
For
right.
society.
Right.
Right.
So now you have to adjust right. without knowing how to adjust or even why you're adjusting.
Yeah, it's right. normal in this microscopic area
right.
of the world and right. of society. That's normal.
Right.
But now you have to go into the real world, so to speak.
Right.
Which...
Where 99% of people have no fucking idea correct. What you've just experienced correct. Or been through.
Literally, when you're back, correct. It's like the fucking blind leading the blind.
Well, it's like landing on another planet.
When yeah. we got back, it was we doing our processing, and our staff sergeant pulled us aside, and he's like, hey, if any of you guys talk to the side and tell me you have a problem, you're not going on leave.
Straight the fuck up.
You are not going on leave.
So this is interesting because this mirrors something I experienced in the police department, which is I appreciate that you might need to tell someone that you're having problems, and if you're having problems, you should definitely tell someone. However, we're going to fuck you for it.
Yeah. If you tell someone, you might as well leave your gun and your ID, right. and then you'll be yep. working the desk until further.
Again, that's without going into yeah. detail, that's oh, basically okay. what happened to me.
Well, I'll just keep it to myself.
Right.
Thank you.
And I'll shut the fuck up and eat my gun, exactly. and then you'll know.
Exactly. And I never, and it's the same, yeah, you get back in, and then there's also that peer, not always, but that peer pressure as well when you don't want to leave your buddy hanging out doing shit alone, or you know what I mean? You're not going to take yourself out of the equation because you owe it to your buddy to not do that because he's going to have to pick up your fucking slack, you know?
Yep. So now, do you guys have a feeling, sorry to interrupt, but because it's just dawned on me and I'll forget to ask, do you have an issue? Because I know for me, and Salty, for you, I'm sure you've experienced based on other podcasts we've done that, spoiler alert, haven't come out yet, you've experienced the thing where you do the right thing and you get turned on.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
So the guys that may in fact be having the same problem as you or have the same fear as you, but because you're the one who actually stepped up and were brave enough to say something, fuck you, you piece of shit. You pussy.
You're in a group full of warriors and any weakness gets...
Right.
Well,
you hear how we fucking eat each other up at this table yeah. just over stupid shit. We're yeah. all type A personalities.
Well, yeah, it comes down to the point, like, you want to complete the fucking mission.
Right.
At all costs. So if I have a blown out fucking knee, I guess I'm going to run on it because that's yeah. the mission right now is to get through this run.
Right.
And I'm not going to, you know, make my guys, you know, pick up that slack.
And for lack of a better term, that's beaten into you.
Yeah, it's I mean, you're programmed that way.
Right.
But, you know, this is the most powerful military in the world.
Yeah.
I mean... There's a place for that.
Yeah.
There has to be.
Yeah. Right.
It's the after that's the problem.
Right. And I've heard it said, if it doesn't make the members of the men and women in the military more deadly, then it has no place in the military.
Yeah. Right.
Which is Correct.
Agree.
100%. In a big way. But then you create this huge gap, which we're going to talk about as you keep going, which is, okay, so to what end do we service them when we're done teaching them to be deadly and now we're teaching them to be peaceful in a world full of people that have no idea how to even grasp what you've been taught to do to choke the ever-loving shit? We posted that meme when veterans in the workplace, don't let this suit fool you, John. I will choke the shit out of you.
So that's one of General Mattis's things. It was be polite, be professional,
have a plan to kill everyone you meet.
Now you get out of the military and...
Yeah, that doesn't work everywhere.
Well, okay, so legitimately, when you tell people that they teach you to be polite, be professional, and have a plan to kill everyone you meet, I did not take that lightly. That was my instruction, and as I'm sure it was yours. It was not a suggestion, and it was not a cute bumper sticker. I literally, to this day... And my father, if he's listening to this episode, is probably hearing this for the first time. And he's a police officer, too. He's a retired police officer. So he will either understand it or he won't. But there were Thanksgivings where I thought to myself, if one of these motherfuckers at this table goes sideways, yep, who do I need to shoot first?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I, that's dark as fuck.
Yeah.
But I'm admitting it literally for the first time on this podcast. There were times at Thanksgiving where I was like, well, I got 15 people in this room and God forbid they turn on me and something happened. Who would I have to shoot first?
Dude, who's I'm 54. I'm 54. I do that every day.
Right.
To people I don't even know.
Yep. Yep. All right. So you get out. You go from being a fucking asset
to being
a piece of shit.
Another asshole walking around LA.
Asset to asshole.
Ooh, asset like to that. Asshole. Yep. And, That's a rough one, and I have some other things going on too, but the depression was really the big one for me. I'm talking debilitating in the sense where like I didn't want to get out of the fucking bed in the morning, didn't want to do anything really. Would just like the best thing would be to just lay there and die in that spot, and you know you do that enough, and that. That'll give you some crazy thoughts once in a while.
Starts to become a good idea. Yeah.
And just to make the feeling go away, because it's depression and it's anxiety too.
Anxiety is a motherfucker.
I mean, there's other things too. Like me being anxious about somebody acting fidgety in their car in front of me is a different anxiety from like, I'm 30 years old and what the fuck have I done?
Right.
You know?
It's a whole different animal.
And... You know, that took its toll, and I got really bad a while ago, and I got to the point where I was like, hey, they tell you that when you start feeling this way, what you need to do is nip it in the bud then and address those, you know, those thoughts and feelings then so it doesn't turn into me eating my pistol.
Right.
So I did the thing, and I called the crisis line, and it was the biggest fucking mistake I've ever made in my life.
No, let me back up real quick. What... We've talked about all the reasons that you wouldn't call.
Yeah.
What made you? Like, you're programmed with all this. You're a pussy. You're run on your fucking injury. Fuck you. You're a warrior. You don't need help.
Yeah.
And then you actually, because I know for me what made me finally pull the ripcord. So I'm curious for you, dialing those fucking 10 digits is a hard thing to do. So yeah. What was it, if you can share it with us, that made you finally go, you know what? Nope, it doesn't matter. I'm calling.
I've been doing it my way.
Mm-hmm.
My way is not making it better. So I'm open to try new things. And the thing is like the lack of information, because the VA's answer to everything is to medicate you.
Right.
100%.
Everybody's answer to
everything. I've full of pills.
I've got a cabinet full of antidepressant meds that I refuse to take because... As a medic, I know the long-term effects they have on people and, like, turning you into a mass shooter and crazy things like that. I don't necessarily need to be deadpan all the time. That's a bad thing for me. If I don't have an adrenaline response or, like, any type of, like, emotional response to something, that's a problem.
Right.
It's
like cutting off somebody's dreams. They'll go insane. Well, you have to have highs. You have to have lows.
Well, I'm still going to act on an impulse now, and there's nothing telling me don't do that.
Right. You're numb.
Right. Numb to it.
Yeah.
And being numb... just suppresses everything.
Like I think people are like, how do gangbangers get in these crazy shootouts? How could you wrap your mind around that? Well, a lot of them are on drugs.
Yeah,
You know what I mean? And that I think every mass shooter that they've talked about, or most of them anyway, have been on some sort of antipsychotic
at some point.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. So there's that side to it too. And I'm sure if I found the right stuff, I could. But long story short, I call them. They say, come into the West LA VA facility. And I'm like, cool, I'm there. And I'm thinking, great, I'll get to talk to somebody. They'll be like, no, you're being stupid, stop it. Completely different from what happened when I got there. So I had my mom drive me down there because I was assuming they were probably going to give me sort of meds or something. Yeah. No, I didn't think they were going to keep me at this
point. Really?
No.
You just figured whatever meds they gave you would make it so you couldn't drive.
Or that, or, you know, I just have somebody there with you because I didn't know. You know, I've never gone to the VA for like that before.
So she's a safety blanket.
Exactly.
I don't know what I'm going to experience.
Yeah.
Come with me.
Can't bring, you know.
Have a plan.
Yeah, exactly. So I go in. And right off the bat, they have these private security guards that wait at the front. And I had called ahead, so they knew I was coming. And the dude says, you need to sign in. No problem, man. They know I'm coming. And I'm going over to his little desk or his little folding table to sign in. And just an attitude the whole time. And I'm like, because he's like, yeah, you have to sign in every time. I don't know why you don't know that. And I was like, because I've never been here before, bro. Where do I need to sign in?
And it's the VA hospital.
The VA hospital. And he's like, right here on this line. I'm like, okay, no problem. Do you have a pen? And he's getting all mad. No, I don't have a. What, you don't have a pen? And I'm like, no, I didn't come to the hospital. You know what I mean? Like, normally you guys have a. Why is it an issue right now? And then I'm going back and forth with this guy.
So he's being shitty with you.
Yeah. And at this point, I'm like, this is nonsense. I'm not wasting my time on this unimportant shit. You know what I mean? I'm walking into the thing and. He starts yelling at me and starts yelling at my mom, who's with me. And if you guys don't want to follow the protocol, you guys can leave and walk out. And what I said was, I said, you motherfucker are the reason why veterans are eating their gun in the waiting room around the country.
Is he in the military?
No.
No.
So he's
probably
just some
civilian.
Fucking private.
Just some fucking private.
Yep. Fucking security
fucking
guard.
Fucking rent-a-cop. And,
getting paid way too much an hour to be an asshole.
I will.
So I know, and that's the point I was at too. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, I'm trying to this is like, but it's a minor irritation at this point.
No, but somewhere in the back of your mind, you're like, motherfucker, I could knife hand you into next Tuesday.
Well, I said, this is why veterans are eating guns in the waiting rooms. And he said, you have a gun? And I said, no, that's not what I said. Stop it. And I knew what he was doing, and I knew he was going to try to escalate the situation right there.
So you think he was doing it deliberately, as opposed to
hearing
you properly?
Exactly. Okay. I think he was trying to mess around. Well. I start getting loud with him, like, I'm walking in, you do what you want to do. And he stands up, and basically, as he stands up fast, right, to try to intimidate me, and swipes the table out of the way. Well, I'm not the one you do that to, because I will fucking fight you. And I don't care about that. But he did. He moved that table aside, and I squared up.
Yeah,
well,
we've had fun fights.
Yeah.
You will know you don't understand the joys of a good fucking Donnybrook if you've never.
Oh no, I'm
it.
Talking about when Michael and I have actually fought with people.
It was
a good time.
So am I. I'm just saying that I've heard the wistfulness
and it's
in
not,
your voice.
It's not the right thing. I was acting like a child because I was upset.
But I'll back up. I'm going to defend you, even if you won't defend yourself, because you were doing something that is the antithesis of everything you have been taught and trained and is ingrained in you to do. And it's very, very, very fucking scary to do.
Yeah.
You just said you brought your mom. Because you didn't know what you were going to face.
Yeah.
That is a huge fucking admission, whether you realize it or not, because what you're saying is, for lack of a better word, I didn't know what was going to happen, and I needed my mom with me.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean,
and so you go there, and this fucking turd dick squares up on you, and you're in this heightened state of, I don't want to be here, but I need to. And fuck you if you're going to get in my way, you piece of shit.
Well, it's just the way he got up and squared up. I'm like, I'm just not. And he's probably.
It's nonsense.
He was in his 60s probably. And I'm like, dude, I'll fucking kill you. What?
Right.
Like, what are you doing right now? Cause, and he's a big fat. He was a big fat piece of shit. And he just, you know, wanted to.
Stop or I'll throw my keys at you.
Yeah, wanted to flex his power. Well, he was not a joke. But the VA cops that came through the waiting room doors and proned me out right there. They were not fucking around.
Right.
So. At some point in this conversation, I think the female partner he had with him radioed up and said, told the VA police that I had a gun.
So he made a dickhead comment.
And that I threatened them
his
with a gun.
His partner radios it in.
Yep.
As legit.
Yep.
And they respond as if you're armed.
Yeah, they do.
Awesome.
So I actually, so it wasn't
Does
in the
VA stand for vicious asshole.
I don't know, curious. Man. I don't know what their deal was, but at this point, I'm like, okay, now I need to comply because in my mind, I know the call that they just got, and they don't know, and right. I'm not gonna fucking find out the hard way if they really think I have a gun or not, you know.
So talk us through that real quick, because this is an interesting thing for us as police officers, is to understand when you're on the wrong end of bad information and understand that you may not be at fault, but that doesn't fucking matter because the people that are coming
right.
don't know that.
They
don't
know. They only have part of the story yeah. and right. their story matters for the time being.
So you had the presence of mind yeah. to think to yourself,
I don't know how people don't. I really don't understand how people don't. That's called self-preservation. Mm-hmm. I know right now at this point in time, what they have in route is lethal force, the potentiality of lethal force against me.
Right.
I'm going to do everything they say at this point because I know at the end of the day, they're not going to, it's not like they're going to lock me up in a war camp or something like that. It's our police officers in our right. own country. You know what I mean?
Right.
They're there for public safety. And that's, and I think
yeah, they're not going to take you down to a room.
What are they, and beat you? Why? You know, yeah. And beat right. me in water. But like, that's stupid. So what do? You comply until they're comfortable and they figure it out. And at the same time, everything's on video. So if you didn't do anything nowadays, especially at the VA, everything's on video. If you didn't do anything, so just comply. So that was the state that I was in. I said, okay, now it's time for me to comply. So they conducted a felony stop. They prone me out and came up. And at the time that this was happening, I was on the cell phone with the crisis line still. So the crisis line saw and recorded all this shit going down.
How did you end up? Did you call them as you arrived, or did you already have them on the phone?
Yeah, because what the crisis team does is they'll get a doctor that's in their mental section there, right. or the mental health section. They'll get a doctor ready to see you, and what they want to do is check out look at your vitals and make sure that you're not gonna, you know what I mean, that
are you're
not
high.
Yeah,
are you detoxing?
Yeah, exactly.
Are you danger to self? Danger
exactly.
To other? Yeah.
So. So I cooperated with the VA police. They were all very nice. Once I explained to them what was going down, they were kind of like, you know, what's this guy? Yeah, fuck this guy. But I had a freak out at a VA facility. So where they take you is the mental health holding cell. And what they're looking at from their perspective, obviously this veteran is emotional and he's freaking out. I think he does need to get seen. He called because he wants to get seen. So we're just going to go ahead and admit him.
Oh. And to be fair,
what a shit.
There have been so many veterans with yep. problems that haven't called and done some stupid shit. That for them, they're thinking, well, if this guy has called, he must be much worse.
He must be really one
really
of
bad.
Exactly.
And they don't realize that the guys who call aren't the problem.
Yeah.
I mean, the guys who called are clearly self-aware.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, go on.
So I get locked up in the mental ward of the West Los Angeles VA hospital. I was there for about 20 hours. And
what was that like?
I'll tell you right now, there were people along the way. There were people, the VA police that I was dealing with, they were all veterans. They understood what was going right. on. They were really cool. A couple of the doctors and nurses were really cool. On the flip side of that, it's like a fucking nightmare, bro. Because you get put in this environment, first of all, where there are really fucking crazy people. Like the first thing I saw when I walked in, cause they're open pods basically. So they have like a control center where all the nurses can look out and see, all of us out there. They put us in the ISIS, the green pajama state clothes, right?
Right. So now you're dressed just like the fuckers you were supposed to detain.
Yep.
Which has a psychological effect, yeah. whether people understand it or not.
They take away all of your personal possessions. You don't have a phone. They put you in property like you're getting booked into jail. They put your property in holding, and then you're basically cut off from the outside world.
Right.
The second level of the VA, or is it second? I think it's the second floor, is all mental ward, and it's all lockdown mental ward. And you get like a phone call a day. You don't know what's going on. They won't let you talk to your doctors because you're crazy.
No clocks, no watches,
no clocks,
time of day.
No watches, no outside. They're only outside. It's like jail. The only outside is like a little pen on the top. You can see it from Google Maps on the top of the West VA.
Not
they
a
have
pen flare. Just a pen.
No, just a pen. Just a little pin or pin. How is that? A little gated area. and that's what it was for 20 hours. Was me trying to explain to them like, hey, look, I'm not crazy. I just wanted to talk to somebody when I came in here. I've never seen people is broken, as I saw in there. And it gave me a little bit of a reference point about like where I'm at.
Compared, it was a gut check.
It was a gut check again. Where, and it was from all veterans from, you know, Vietnam and all the way up to the or recent conflicts. You know, it's all ages and genders and everything in there. They're co-ed. It's male and female. There's no separation in these pods. You sleep in rooms with like five other people in a little room, and it's like cement beds, yeah, so you like can't lift dorm. Them. Kind of like it's like a dorm and open, like dorm area. It's just like any mental hospital.
Like
you
think. Camp, but
yeah,
on lockdown.
Yeah, that's stupid. And then they send your team. So each person in there gets assigned a team. And I ended up having to sit down with this team of doctors for like 2 hours because I was trying to explain to them, hey, look, I don't need to be in here and be helding. And this has done some stuff to me, that like I can't have a firearm for the next 90 days or you know what I mean? Or it was 90 days from that date, you know, what am I going to do with that? I have plenty of those. Now I'm in the system as having been,
yeah,
right,
as having been admitted for a mental health emergency, which looks fucking horrible. On,
yeah, you just got tattooed.
Yeah, that's there. And, yeah. I'm trying to explain that to them and they're not getting it. And they're like, yeah, but you're getting help. And I was like, this is not helping me. I haven't seen anybody to help. But all you guys did was lock me down, take all my shit away from me. And now you're treating me like I'm a retard or something. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, that's just how it felt. But you start to question, too. You know, I had a little bit of time in there where I was like, man, maybe I am really, really off my rocker. And this is just what it's culminated to. And this is just where I am now.
And yeah, you start doubting yourself.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And
I
then
totally get that.
And then I looked over at the guy smearing shit on the window, and I was like, okay.
No, I'm good. I'm good.
We're not that there yet.
Check really got you.
Huh? Yeah, we're not there yet.
Like, Kyle, keep it up. Keep it up, Kyle. To keep him sane.
But
give that guy another monster.
But it was, you know, it's and the VA, I think, at its core, is not looking to fuck veterans over. That, you know, but I think the VA has so many problems internally about how they handle things and the attention that they give certain things. If you go to talk to somebody on the crisis line, it's because you want to talk to somebody, right? You don't want to get proned out by the VA police in the parking. That's not helping your situation. So the way you go about getting a hold of the VA and the way you go about going in, because you go in the normal emergency room and everything, that's the stuff that really, I think. And there's security guards. Why are you going to have somebody that doesn't want to be there at the VA guarding it, and you have a bunch of disgruntled veterans walking in? He's going to get somebody one day that's not a medic from overseas, and that's like a fucking Delta Force from overseas that's going to wrap his fucking head around that table.
Right.
And then he'll get it. I know they worry about mass shootings, obviously, because their response over there. But what are they going to do if they keep doing this and they get a real crazy one in there that knows what he's doing?
Well, and you can provoke someone.
Yeah.
I mean, this sounds stupid, and I apologize to people for making it seem like I'm trivializing, but the movie First Blood. Go back and watch the original movie, because God bless Sylvester Stallone. He did a really good job of portraying a guy who just wants to be left alone because he's nursing some ugly shit, getting pushed too fucking far. And that sounds like...
I'm not going to turn into Rambo.
No. Like, but what I'm saying is...
I would have gotten annihilated by their SWAT team.
But what I'm saying is you got pushed to the limit. You got pushed to the edge. And if you had not been who you were, if you had been somebody who was higher skilled and in a darker place, you can actually push them to a point that they weren't at.
Right.
But once they've been pushed to, they can't come back from it.
I think that's... Obviously, they're not going to find an all-veteran cast and crew to work at the VA. That's not, you know what I mean? They need civilians there.
Right.
These civilians got to understand like what it is exactly that, you know, they're dealing with. And a lot of it is a lot of broken people.
Yeah.
A lot of fractured and broken people.
Herein lies the problem with that. You can't teach someone that.
Yeah, I know.
Well, Mike and I had a long conversation.
You can't teach someone,
no.
You know, a profile of someone like you. It just doesn't.
Yeah,
they have to have lived it, experienced it, been it, maybe.
Yep.
You know, or been on the, you know, maybe not affected like you, but was there.
Yep.
You know,
there was a female.
It's not possible.
One of the police officers that proned me out was a female, And she was really, I guess she was an MP, and she was asking me like what I did and everything, trying to calm the situation down. She, one of the first things they want to know, obviously, is, am I armed? Right, you know, sure. when they prone me out. And I told her she was coming up. I, first of all, didn't move a fucking hair on my body until she told me to. It's a good way to get shot. But yeah, I listen.
Pro tip.
Yeah. Don't fucking move when they tell you not to
get at you and they say don't fucking move. Guess what? Don't fucking move.
Is that common sense or what?
No, because there's nothing common about common sense anymore.
She took a look at me, like flipped me over, obviously did the search and everything, right, and took one look at me and was like, do I need to cuff you? And I was like, no, I don't have anything. That's not even why I'm here. I said, I'm just here to get some help. Okay. Well, here's what's going to happen.
Because she had some fucking common sense.
She had some wherewithal.
And she treated you like a human being.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yep.
Correct.
You know, I think part of the VA's problem is they want to show that they've got people there and they're staffing and they're available to help veterans. The problem is that they're just hiring people. You put in an application and you're hired.
Yeah.
That means you don't care.
But there's exactly. Because it's not a screening. They don't understand that the job requires a certain skill set, just like being a police officer or firefighter or getting into certain assignments in the military. It requires a mindset, skill set, mentality. There's certain, like, I've met engineers. All right, now you know, if you've ever met a fucking engineer, they're a different breed of human being. They just are. They think in terms of on and off. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. That's how their mind works. God bless them. We wouldn't have fucking these amazing bridges without them. But you can't ask an engineer to be a grief counselor. And so that's the same thing. You have to understand that you can't just hire any fucking schmuck off the street to work in these positions where they're dealing with people walking in crisis.
Yeah.
And scared.
And it's to the point now where, like, I know what my brain's doing. I'm not an idiot.
Right. Now
when,
you do.
When I start feeling that way, or if I just wake up feeling like a turd in the morning, I know, like, in logically, that's right. My brain producing chemicals in either the wrong order or the wrong amount in my brain. That's my brain's response to it.
Just right.
Get up. You're not really dying. But I can totally see how I understand the 20 or 22 a day or whatever it is.
Right. I have a question. What did your mom do? Well, I know I asked this question for obvious reasons.
When he pulled the table out from in between us and I squared up, she stepped back. She knows better at this point. She was just trying to talk me down. Hey, calm down. In between telling the guy to go fuck himself. I'm glad she wasn't.
She's like, if my son wasn't between us to fuck you up, I would fuck you up.
Oh, yeah. She was on one. And then, you know, and then obviously once we got everything squared away, they realized that she's retired and everything from LAPD. So there was that commonality there. They didn't know that when they came up on me. I pulled a couple really good, like, tidbits for life away from this. Like, one, don't call the crisis line.
Which sucks.
No, I'm being serious.
No, but I know, but that sucks.
I'm being serious. That is a fucking useless tool that is put up by a government agency to check a fucking box on something.
Right. 100%.
That's the liability line.
And I'll tell everybody that right now. I'll stand by that. I'll stand by whatever, whoever wants to do anything about that. I stand by that. That's a fucking checked box right there because that did nothing for me. There are a billion other programs, if you're feeling that way, that you need to go talk to and get linked up with that are not the VA for that type of help. If you want to get your benefits and your stuff from the VA, by all means, I'm doing it right now. That's awesome. Don't go to your fucking counseling at the VA. That's all I...
And you do have the option to go elsewhere, right?
Yeah. Now you do, yeah.
Yeah, now you do.
Now you do. Good. But what the VA is doing is they'll fuck you around and they'll make that a longer wait than just waiting to see your normal provider at the VA.
Right.
Or they'll send you to somebody that doesn't even give a fuck and keeps canceling your appointments.
Yeah.
Well, so part of that is, you know, get... This is what we're talking about with... They don't give you somebody that is your sponsor. They don't give you somebody that is your battle buddy. Because we're all taught that. Battle buddy. You stay with your partner.
I just want to pause real quick, though, because I sound like a whiny fucking millennial.
No, you don't.
Millennial. I honestly am grateful that they're there because it's something for me. I'm just saying that, like anything, it can be improved upon. And they've got some real weak spots in their game.
The good things they do are often overshadowed by the fucked up, ham-fisted way in which they do it. And we can... It's the same thing. It's the same thing with law enforcement. Bureaucracy is the fucking death knell of somebody trying to do the Red Cross, you know, all these organizations when 80% of the money goes to administration, only 20% goes to feeding the fucking homeless. So it's you don't sound like a whiny bitch. I'm just thinking in terms of, as I asked you, did they give you, when you get out, a mentor, somebody that you go to, which if you had that person, if you had somebody who had been there, done that, and had the t-shirt to fucking prove it, you know, that goes a long way to saying, hey, look, number one, if you, you may not need to call the crisis line. You may just need to call me.
Yeah.
And I may just need to tell you, I get it. It's cool. Versus somebody who has no fucking idea, but it has a questionnaire in front of them. Have you had suicidal thoughts? Yes. Check the yes box. Have you ever thought of hurting somebody else? Yes. Well, check the yes box. Well, and all of a sudden, there's this profile of a fucking serial killer.
Well, the unfortunate thing is that had everything gone normally, the system might have actually worked. I mean, so he never even really got to it.
No.
He never even got to what is supposedly being offered to the vets.
Right.
Everything got cut off in the lobby.
Yep.
And then you went down a whole other fucking road that wasn't planned.
Yep. Right.
Right. So you don't even know what's available. You don't even.
And to be fair, you are taking responsibility. You just said there were things that I said and did that provoked it. But
I think that there are people there that maybe didn't have problems that were too bad off and went into that hospital in there and came out worse.
Yeah.
Because of the conditions in there.
Yep.
They have four wings, and I'm really quite curious to know what's in the other wings up there. But it's a federal level. When they hold you there, you don't talk to anybody. You know that, right? They don't want you to.
So we'll train you. So we'll train you to go kill. We'll train you to be able to save. In your case, save human beings in the worst conditions ever. Yeah. We'll put all of this in. But we'll also put your ass in jail,
yeah,
and lock your ass down when you get out.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
So that was the latest thing in my life where it, and it did, you know, maybe I needed it. Everything happens for a reason. 'Cause it put a lot of things into perspective for me. It put a lot of things into perspective for me.
Yeah. But pulling out the positives that you gained from a situation doesn't absolve the people who fucked it up to begin with.
No, it doesn't. But I'm not going to give them my attention or time.
No,
anyway,
you shouldn't.
Yeah,
but
somebody needs to.
Collectively, the faceless they should fix it. Well, who's they? Well, we are they.
So, I'd like to expand upon that. You and Zohan have spoken. How much more helpful was that versus going to the VA?
1,000 billion times,
right?
More effective.
And I think that's where it's hard for a lot of veterans to realize, is that it's hard to call your friend and say, hey, bro, I'm having a hard fucking time.
Yeah, it's hard because you don't want to put that on them.
Exactly. But at the same time, as a fellow veteran is, hey, you know what? Like, let's go get a beer. Let's go somewhere. Let's talk. And especially as men, it's hard to be like, hey, dude, let's go have dinner because I need to talk. It's always like, hey, can I go get a beer? But even making that phone call sometimes is hard to do.
In my head, it always comes out like,
I'm having a real hard time, man. My life sucks and I'm the only one.
And that's the furthest thing like from what I actually... I think that's a service member thing. Yeah. That's that mentality where it's a sheepdog. Yeah.
Well, the best part was he texts me, I think it was the night of that you got out or whatever. He texts me, he's like, hey, man, can you do me a favor and just call me when you get a chance? I know you're probably busy at work or whatever. And... I saw the text message, but I was really busy at work, right. And I'm like, all right, I'll get back to him tomorrow or something like that. And then when I did finally call him and talk to him, and he started talking to me, I was like, you need to stop. I'm a fucking motherfuck you for about 5 minutes.
Yep.
You know, you could have said it was important, and I would have stopped everything I was doing, regardless of what the fuck I was doing, and I would have called you, and we could have had this conversation for as long as you wanted, you know. So I get it. But anyways, we had a long conversation. About what had happened, and you know, as long as it was helpful for him, and it was helpful for me too, because even though I don't, it's been a while since I've called someone for whatever reason, you know, it's still good.
There's a certain element of that we need. We need, you know, that what makes us, you know, who we are, and the ability to go into dangerous situations and compartmentalize and take care of business. I think inherently that part of us is the exact same part of us that causes us to downplay it when we're out of it, and we, you know, soft pedal it or soft shoe it or try to, you know, I don't need to go to the doctor. It's fine. And just fucking rub some dirt on it. You know, I'm going to swallow a bag of concrete, harden up, and soldier on. You know, so I think some of it's unavoidable. But therein lies the accountability part of it, which is just this circle around this table. We all have an obligation to have each other's back, both on and off the field.
Yeah.
Right. So when I'm having troubles at the department, it's the responsibility of my car partners and my shift partners and my, you know, teammates to say, hey, let's go fucking get a beer, you know, let's go talk, whatever. As opposed to, oh fuck, dude, he's running a little slower than the rest of us. We need to cull the herd and cut him, you know, because fuck, dude.
Well, sometimes you.
But here's the thing: I think if we stop and we acknowledge what he's going through,
yeah,
we inevitably have to take a long, hard look at that same fucking shit in ourselves.
And it's hard to do.
And it's terrifying.
Yeah, it's very hard to do.
It's based on merit, too. You know, I've talked to a lot of guys that they feel that their emotional response to things should be based on the merit of the deed that they, you know what I mean? That if they weren't in a 12-hour firefight, that there's no way that they should have, you know, PTSD. Like, you had to live through incoming bombs and you know.
Yeah, there's so many people worse than me.
Exactly.
I don't deserve to have a problem.
And that's why it's sometimes hard for me to talk to John. Because if you look at the experience, I had a much different experience in combat, you know, than I did. And so it's like, what am I going to tell John that's going to, oh, and that's exactly, sorry.
No, just keep going. I'll believe it.
And that's beep. I'm going to hear a lot of those beeps in the next episode. Beep. Every time we have this guy on. But yeah, and I think it's just the opposite of that. I think because Zohan has been through those same things, he has a better understanding of it than I do. Probably,
you think he does.
Probably for
you
the
think
most part.
He does.
Yeah.
But you don't. Because, you know, it's funny because I looked, my old man did 25 years at LAPD and I did 10 years at 11 years at a smaller Central California Police Department. And he never had to get into shooting. I mean, he was there. He was present where gunfire was occurring, right, is what he told me, basically. And he pointed his gun at people, but all cops point their gun at people. So he did 25 years, never got directly involved. In my first 3 years, I was involved in something. And, you know, I thought, well, you know, you've seen way more shit than I have. And he's like, nah, I never saw anything that was anything like the one time that you dealt with it. And he even looked, he says, he says, I'm kind of envious because you were tested. You were tested and you know on the other side of that test how you're going to react and you behave. So I think our tendency is to second guess ourselves in comparison to what other people have experienced and downplay our own experiences, as opposed to this podcast is a perfect example. How many times in recent, and Salty, I'm going to ask you if you will read something, that feedback that you got that actually ties directly into this. We have told some dumb fucking shit stories on this podcast, some of them which have not come out yet. Some of, you know, obviously 10 episodes have already come out with. And we've gotten a lot of feedback with people going, the Macy's story on our Macy's episode, there was a comment made that I don't know how the young cops today engage, because my generation of cops, my mentality was you get out. If the bad guy needs his ass kicked, you kick his ass. If the bad guy needs to get shot, you shoot him. And these young guys get out and they think the bad guy needs his ass kicked or he needs to get shot, but I'm afraid to do it because I might lose my house or I might get hung out to dry by the department or I might get arrested or might get charged with a crime. So we have this tendency to look at things through our own lens and not understand that the average person has no idea what we're dealing with, has no idea what we're going through. And the feedback we're getting is when they hear this stuff, they're like, holy shit, I cannot believe that you dealt with that. I did not ever think that that would be your mindset. So when you look at Zohan and you go, oh, I've seen what you've gone through. I didn't go through anything like that. You're trying to color your experiences through the lens of what you saw him go through. And you can't. You can't compare the two.
Which I told you.
Yeah, I know.
Well, okay, but, you know, but it's hard to understand that when you're in the moment, right?
Of course.
And so...
It's like, are you going to complain? Like, in my... The way my stupid brain works, am I going to go up to a Medal of Honor recipient? You know what I mean? And be like, man, I had a real rough time in the military. Let me tell you, I blew my back out, you know? And right. I don't... That's my child brain making sense of things, and I understand that. But it is a thing for a lot of service members. It's just a fear of what you have going on doesn't deserve... I don't know. I don't know. It's a weird...
Okay, so I'm going to share this with you then, because this ties right into it, and then I want to have your feedback, because you receive feedback, Salty, on Instagram that kind of directly ties into this.
I did.
I was the same way, and I still am internally, like... In my heart, I'm still that way. But I had an event happen to me post-retirement, after I had retired from the police department, and I was still, I had moved on to my new career, but it had only been 2 years, and I was still in this almost self-pity phase of, I've moved on, but I suck because I couldn't hack it, I couldn't do what I did, or this, that, and the other thing. I went to SHOT Show in Vegas. And at one of the booths, they had Al Mampry, and he was a member of the 101st Airborne Easy Company, which, for those of you listening to this, if you don't know who Easy Company is, go fucking watch Band of Brothers and do yourself a favor. They were the most amazing group of guys that stuck together through the entire war. And I walked by, and I had another person from work with me, and I looked over, and I just saw this old dude in a wheelchair wearing a 101st Airborne jacket, and then I saw the front patch on his pocket was from their battalion and division. And
Curry.
Right. Exactly.
Fuck. I was there.
Yeah, this mother, just so you know, Zohan was 101st Airborne. Fuck yeah.
That was the unit I was with.
Yeah. So I saw this dude, and I just stopped dead in my tracks, and the person I was with started walking, and then I was in a daze. I was just like kind of drawn over to this table where this old man was sitting in a wheelchair. And she had walked over. She's like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "You don't know who that is?" She's like, "No, I have no. It's some old World War II vet." And I was like, "You know, it's It's like meeting. For me, it was like meeting Sean Connery or something. You know, just like this iconic person.
Sean Connery.
The cookie crumbles.
We all bust
everybody's
out
got one.
So, and to just so you know, Al Mampry was the, if you watch Band of Brothers, he's the medic who was literally treating his lieutenant under sniper fire in the middle of the field and wouldn't leave him. And I sat down with the guy and I waited in line, met him, talked to him, took a picture with him, and he signed a black and white photo of him to me. And I did the usual, thank you for your service. This and that and the other thing. And he said, "Oh, were you in the military?" I said, "No, sir, I wasn't. But, you know, I'm a retired police officer." And he goes, "Oh." And his face changed. And I said, he said, "Thank you for your service." And I went,
that's not the way that works.
No. Uh-uh. And he goes, "No, thank you." And I said, "Sir, I can't, nothing I've done could ever compare to what you did." And he goes, "Well, that's where you're wrong, son." He says, "My war lasted 3 years. Your war lasts 20 years every day of your life for your entire career. So thank you, because you guys are heroes." And hearing it from his mouth, it gave me a totally different perspective that this man who had been through so much shit could look at what I had done and what I had been involved in and say, no, it's the same thing. It's in some ways to him, it was better. So when you're comparing yourself to Zohan, I hear that and I go, I get it, but you're still fucked up because you can't.
Yeah, you can't. And I know that you should never compare yourself to other people. That's a good way to drive yourself crazy. You just compete with yourself if you're going to, go that route.
Unless you're in a race and then you compete with other people.
But if you're a human, you compare yourself to other people.
Exactly.
That's a natural thing. I think in many ways it's probably a survival mechanism that you're sizing other people up to see if you're, I don't know why we feel like that. And I think everybody knows that
it's because we're human.
Right. Yeah.
We're all wired a little differently.
A little bit differently.
And as experiences come across our table, we just handle them differently.
Yeah.
And,
differently as we're all wired. We're all wired the same.
No, we're all wired the same. It's amazing. And what might affect me is not going to affect him or him.
Right.
But what I may look at and chuckle at may devastate him.
Right.
I mean, that's just you know the way we're wired. Let me bring this up.
Yeah, because that's what I wanted to have you because. An unintended consequence. The first idea behind this podcast was that we'd all get together and we'd purge our demons and have a good time doing it. And then other people get to listen and be like, wow, that's fucked up shit. But there has been kind of an unintended consequence that I wanted you to share because it kind of ties into what we were just talking about, which is understanding what people have gone through.
Right. So I've been hit up a couple of times by a couple of acquaintances that are just normal, everyday people, have jobs like everybody else, don't have family in law enforcement or military. You know, they have regular jobs. They go to work. They come home. They have families.
Civilians.
Well, it's just regular, just regular people. And I've had people come up to me and say, I had no idea. I didn't know. You know, I heard this episode, whichever episode it was. You know, every time there's a shooting, I see it all the time on the news, but I never really... knew what you were thinking. I never knew what he was thinking. I never heard about the process that was happening in seconds, you know, or fractions of a second. And, you know, it's given me a whole different perspective on law enforcement, military. It's just opened, it's opened people's eyes to that. Right. And it's, from my point of view, it's very interesting because like you said, I never thought that.
Right.
Right. Because we tell these stories to each other and
we laugh because that was Thursday.
And chuckle, where someone listens to the same stories and goes, holy shit, I didn't even think about that. Holy shit. And it's just everyday business as usual to us.
Right.
So it really is uplifting to hear other people that are not in this world understand what's happening in this world. And, you know, down the line, that information will maybe pass down the line to other people, and people will just, in general, start to have a different perspective on what happens day to day while you're just going about your business, right? So, to take it to one step further, this is a message that I got from a wife of someone that is a officer somewhere in California.
Okay,
they've been married for... Oh, shoot. I just lost it. they've been married for, 15 or 20 years. So this is
just unsolicited. You got a message.
Unsolicited message. This is the wife who is not law enforcement.
Right.
Who's married to a law enforcement officer. Right. And I'll read it. Finally finished episode 2. I have to say thank you. Thank you for really helping me put things in perspective. So-and-so, my husband, doesn't tell me much. I guess it's his way of trying to protect me. So this is coming from
the
wife of someone that has been in this for, you know, 15, 20 years. So I sent a message back. You know, I basically thanked her for the feedback. And she said, of course, it's taken me about a decade to adapt to the law enforcement life, but I can only hope and pray for patience and understanding.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
So, you know, this is coming from not someone that has no contact with law enforcement. This is someone that is the wife of an officer and that just goes day in and day out living life. And one of the podcasts, in this case, episode 2, kind of opened her eyes to what's happening behind the scenes, really about her husband.
Right.
Right. Had nothing to do with whoever was talking in episode 2, but it was her husband because it's all the same,
right?
You know, whether it was my episode or his episode or his, we're all the same, you know? And so it was interesting to see that it's having an impact on, people that, are even close to law enforcement that are not even able to tap into what's really happening behind the scenes.
Cause you can be close to us and never be close to us.
Correct. And some of us are fortunate enough to be, you know, married to people that are the same.
Right.
And so it'd be in my case, it'd be like talking around this table, but not everybody can do that.
No.
And it's just not the same.
I didn't realize what a brutal schedule law enforcement has until I started doing bounty hunting and really looking for fugitives and being out there for, like, you know, three on, two off, mm-hmm. which doesn't seem like a lot. But when you're working 3 12s, by the end of that third 12, and longer than that, mm-hmm. I mean, I had so many 19, 20 hour, 22 hour days. Imagine that for 25 years. And that's,
yeah, you're seeing double.
Yeah. And that's, and that's, and that's what I told myself. Can you do this? Can you do this? Pick up this tempo.
For then be expected to perform
for 25 years
at the end of it,
and then get home and take care of all the stuff you need to take care of once you get home.
And let me say, based on what you just said and what you said earlier,
yeah,
okay. So, and as trivial as this may sound to probably everybody listening, I had a long career. You know, I had 30 years, but I did leave before my time, and there were other things that'll come out. You know, I did leave before my time. My time to leave came. Not at my timeline.
Right.
Right.
Which is always a hard thing for us.
It was very hard, yeah. Right? But to this day, something that just kind of was strange, and this has now been almost 2 years. No, almost 2.5 years. So I go to my last day, and I have to go to the retirement counselor. And I go to the parking lot, and I swipe my card. I get into the parking lot, park my car, walk over to the retirement counselor. I go do my stuff. We switch IDs, you know, blah, blah, blah. All that stuff happens. I'm like, I'm done. I'm retired. So I come walking out. I go across the street to the same parking lot to swipe to go get my car. I can't get in. And just like that.
Just like that. You're out.
Just like that.
It's
you were in.
Finished.
And now you are
finished. Literally within 30 minutes, my key card didn't work anymore. And it never will again. Right. And I know it's trivial. And I know it doesn't matter because I'm not going to that fucking parking lot or that department or anything. I get that.
It's a symbol.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're in,
mm-hmm.
and then you are out.
Yeah. It's strange.
And you go from, I felt like I went from having a lot of control over my environment and a lot of control about what was going on around me to no control whatsoever.
Zero. Yeah. Here's $140,000 worth of equipment and a bunch of people's lives that we entrust you with to get them home safely for 4 years. And now that you're home, get the fuck out, and we can't even trust you to fucking... take medication on time and get to work on time, mm-hmm. and drive your car, and you know, it's, yeah, so
it's a rough system.
It is a
you
rough
know
system.
It's a rough system, and I do believe that there's people that want to and are trying to make the system better for military and law enforcement, yes. But I think it's a process.
You cannot take a warrior that has a craft that is
it's a process
that and just put them out there with nothing where they can't use their craft anymore. Right. I think the best thing somebody can do when they're getting out of those things is God damn it, have a hobby. Yeah. I know that sounds so cliche. No, no.
It's, yeah. Our academy coordinator had the Condo in Redondo speech.
Condo.
He said, have friends that aren't in law enforcement and have your eyes set on a condo in Redondo, because if you don't start from day one having your eyes on a life after this, you will not have a life after this.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So
anyway,
this has been a uplifting episode. No, this is an important episode. I appreciate thank you for sharing it. Cause I talked to you ahead of this thought, and I said, if you don't want to, he said, no, it's fine. Fuck it. So I really appreciate it, because these are the war stories that don't end, because your war doesn't necessarily end. It's the changes that take place in you that you're never going to shake, that you're never, you know, it's the fact that to this day, I've been out of it for five or six years. I still have to sit with my back to the wall in a restaurant.
Yeah. Why would you? And it's the mentality of why, if that's a little edge, it'll give me a huge advantage. Why would I not take that for something I can do right now? But that's the mentality.
But 30 years later, 35 years later, you're still thinking that.
Right.
Yeah. I'm telling you, it doesn't go away. It never, ever goes away.
Do you take your seatbelt off a mile before you get anywhere?
What's a seatbelt?
Yeah. Right. You see what I'm saying? There's certain things that I've had people look at me and go, what the fuck you do that
for? You should
for?
See the two of us jockey around a restaurant.
Right. It's probably hilarious watching you two try and find a seat
when
you go out with your wife, because she's, you know, I always tell people, look at a square table and watch four cops try and sit down and have a meal. It's like musical fucking chairs. Mm-hmm. And soldiers, same thing. You guys all have your peccadillos. You all have your little things that are ingrained in you. And, you know, you can make fun at the people who say, hey, keep vets in mind when you set off fireworks. But seriously, keep vets in mind when you set off fireworks.
Nah, 4th of July, fuck that.
No. I'm not saying 4th of July, don't fuck. Yeah, set off fucking fireworks. It's awesome. But bear in mind that not everybody is going to handle it in the same Star Spangled.
He's not saying not to do it. He's saying to think about
it. Just think about it. That's it. Just think about it. That's all. Yeah. It's fucking Memorial Day and Veterans Day are there for a reason. Remember, well, okay, how can people reach us?
Oh, is that where we're going?
Yeah, let's do that. I almost skipped that whole fucking
part. Oh, is that what we're doing now?
I was like,
just like getting out of the military. And on that note.
And on that note, fuck you. Bye.
Oh, boy.
They can get us on Instagram at War Stories Official. If you just type in War Stories Official, you'll find us. We have a Facebook page, which is facebook.com/War Stories.
Yeah, sorry. I was checking.
Caught up in
out.
The moment.
Yeah, I was checking. Well, because I was on our Instagram and I've been posting actively as we're,
right.
Doing this episode or whatnot. And anyways, you could check out my sweet pics while I was. There's some good pictures that I got today. As far as if wanting to give us a call, leave us a message, say really whatever you want to say. Leave us a story. We might
play it.
Might play it. You never know.
Yeah.
Even whether it's good, bad, indifferent, whatever. Right. You never know. That number is 626-692-5122. And I almost called.
And let
you.
Me tag up on this. If you just need to call us and tell us you need help because you're afraid to call the VA hotline, you can do that
That's
too.
True, too. Yeah.
I we'll put you in touch with the right person.
I say that kind of jokingly, but understand that if you call a hotline like that, there's certain responsibilities that they have.
Right. There's boxes they have to check.
About where they have to report to.
Right.
So if you're just going in for some general help like I was just to talk to somebody, maybe don't call that hotline.
Maybe just go in.
Maybe just go in. Yeah.
But if you really need the help.
Yeah.
Go in.
Call whoever you got to call.
Go in.
And if that means us, call us.
You want to send us an email, and again, people have emailed us stories. If you don't want to hit us up on the Instagram, Facebook, or telephone number, our email is mailbag.warstories@gmail.com.
And for you non-veterans, or for you veterans who are in law enforcement, check out thewoundedblue.org. Yeah. They have an amazing documentary, because not all PTSD is war veterans. A lot of our combat veterans are actually the men and women in blue or in tan and green. Thewoundedblue.org has a great documentary about that, and they have a foundation available to support men and women in law enforcement who can't go to their department, because as we've discussed, if you go to your department, you are going to, again, because there are check boxes, set a series of events in motion that will no longer be in your control.
Right.
However, the Wounded Blue provides resources to the men and women of law enforcement so that they can anonymously and without intervention by their department and without losing time and vacation and potentially their job, get the help they need to keep them on the street, crushing crime and suppressing evil. So we interviewed Randy Sutton on a previous episode, and he is heavily involved in that. They also have peer counselors that are in law enforcement available for you. I have reached out to them, and they've contacted me about maybe potentially getting involved in that. So who knows if that's going to happen on the horizon, but I would be more than happy to do it. And I don't have to be a counselor for the Wounded Blue. If you call that number and you need to talk to somebody, we'll be there. So until then, until our next episode, come home with your shield or honor.